Hello and welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mitchell, he's Slim.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watchlist, all under 30 minutes, or I will be forced to reveal exactly how much money I spent during the Criterion 50% off flash sale.
FBI is going to come knock on your door.
Don't make me do it.
Put you in jail. Mitchell, it's John Wick 4 week, the moment all the Wick heads have been waiting for so long. And we knew that this episode was going to be too much for just us to handle. So we had to call in the big guns from Best in Show, just finished their limited series, to tell us who could help us bring this gigantic episode to you. So let's hear from them right now.
First, let's hear from this episode's sponsor. MGM presents A Good Person from Zach Braff, writer and director of Garden State. A Good Person is a beautiful and touching story about finding hope and friendship where you least expect it. The film follows a thriving young woman named Allison, played by Florence Pugh, whose life is suddenly turned upside down by an unexpected tragedy.
That's right, Mia. Allison meets Daniel, played by Morgan Freeman, who is navigating raising his teenage granddaughter while seeking redemption from his past. Through an unlikely friendship, they discover forgiveness, redemption, and hope. Watch Zach Braff's heartwarming film, A Good Person, starring Florence Pugh and Morgan Freeman, only in theaters March 24th.
Finally, Gemma back on Weekend Watchlist. We got her.
That's right. Gemma and Mia just left the studio. They talked about who the sponsor is, and they're gone already. So thanks for that. So this episode, we're going to talk about John Wick and the aforementioned Good Person. Tori and Lakita, community reviews, tagged Weekend Watchlist with that same community thought of last week's movies. And of course, we'll shuffle our own watch list. But one last thing, though, we have a survey, a podcast survey about the Letterboxd Show in the episode notes. We want to hear from you. We're listening right now. Maybe you're on the train. Maybe you're at home. We want to hear what you think about the Letterboxd Show, Best in Show, Weekend Watch List, and what you want to hear from us for the rest of 2023. So head to the episode notes, click the link. It's just a few minutes, and we'd really appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. Let us know what you want to hear from us, because right now what you will be hearing from us is talk about John Wick Chapter 4, directed by Chad Stahelski, 95,000 watch lists. This,
wow.
Well, we did a you know, most anticipated 2023 episode, you, me, and Mia, at the end of last year. John Wick 4 on the top 10 most anticipated from the Letterboxd community. So you're going to get to see it now. It's coming out in theaters this weekend. The synopsis for this one: with the price on his head ever increasing, John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table. He's finally going to do it. But before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces that turn old friends into foes.
Where do you stand? I want to ask you. This is like under the lights. Mitchell's under the lights in the police station because they just found out how much he spent on the Criterion Collection sale. So you're sweating. Where do you stand on the John Wick franchise? People love this franchise. It's like the, I thought about it earlier, it's like the Fast franchise, but for Keanu.
Yeah. Officer, I will say, I'm pro Jonathan
Wick. You're pro Wick.
Big John Wick head here. I'm a big fan. You say the Fast franchise. I'm looking more Mission Impossible franchise.
Oh.
I think the level of consistency with these John Wick movies, you go in, you're getting what you asked for. They're throwing out. I'll say this.
Say it.
Thinking about John Wick Chapter 4, it's huge. It's like 3 hours long. They got Donnie Yen in this thing. They got Scott Adkins in this thing. Like, it's going big. And just thinking back on little old John Wick 1, this movie that not a lot of people believed in. I remember there being memes when the trailer came out. Does Keanu have it? You know, he's coming off that Ronin movie. Like, people didn't believe in Keanu. And then John Wick 1, that movie took off. That was a small little movie about a guy getting revenge for his dog getting killed. And look at where it is now. That movie took off. It had Willem Dafoe in it. John Wick 1.
My God.
My boy. And now it's, I mean, it's one of the biggest franchises in the world, and people are stoked. John Wick 4, it's played a little bit. It's played at, you know, some premieres. It played at South by Southwest. It had a screening, and it's currently sitting at a 4.1 average rating.
That's
on Letterboxd from those. The highest rated John Wick movie right now. We'll see if that holds up with the release. But I mean, right now, the highest rated John Wick movie. What about you, Slim? What are you feeling about John Wick? What are people saying about this movie?
Aaron left a review for John Wick, Chapter 4. I honestly have nothing but praise for how director Chad Stahelski and star Keanu Reeves have managed to take a little but effective action film and turn it into a full-blown franchise. This may be a 169-minute action epic, but it absolutely still fits alongside the first entry's much lower profile, which involved a man getting revenge for the death of his puppy by murdering dozens of people. So people are still alongside for the ride, including Aaron.
Yeah, I want to... Sydney's review on Letterboxd speaks to the consistency of this franchise. Sydney says, all caps, how do they keep getting away with this? And then regular capitalization for the rest of this review. In a world where it no longer seems possible for every movie in a franchise to be a banger, Keanu Reeves and Chad Stahelski emerge from the shadows, ghostly silhouettes in black suits, and say, shh, it's okay. We have more dogs in Donnie Yen. We also did that overhead tracking shot you wanted and made our universe's version of Daredevil and the Penguin. You will see old favorites and be introduced to new ones. You will see some of the most impressive, well-lit and shot action you've ever seen in your life. It's face melting. It's gonna be okay.
My God.
That's direct from Keanu and Chad. So...
oh, my God. All right. So next on our list, you heard about at the top of the show, A Good Person, directed by Zach Braff on 18,000 watch lists. This is in theaters. Synopsis, Allison's life falls apart following her involvement in a fatal accident. The unlikely relationship she forms with her would-be father-in-law helps her live a life worth living. So, you know, people say it all the time. We're living in the Punaissance.
Mm-hmm.
Florence Pugh, she's back at it with Zach Braff, who... I remember growing up with Zach's directorial debut, Garden State, and that trailer. Everyone remembers the trailer for that movie.
Yeah.
Frau Frau, that song Let Go. Maybe the greatest trailer in the history of film. I'm not even trolling right now. But what are you hearing about A Good Person and Florence Pugh and Zach teaming up for this film?
Seeing a lot, looking through those Letterboxd reviews, there have been some people seeing some screenings of it, and the Florence Pugh love is just popping off. Nora wrote a review, Florence Pugh, there literally isn't a role she doesn't crush, and this might be one of my favorites. Florence and Morgan Freeman, who plays the father-in-law, are so good together in this movie, and Zach Braff's direction and writing were also great. It was a little slow in spots, but overall, I enjoyed this one the way I cried through most of this movie. Get those tissues ready.
Yeah, there was a lot of reviews that talked about crying and sobbing uncontrollably. Jen specifically points that out. Reese left a review, a really heartfelt and sincere portrayal of grief, addiction, and forgiveness. The perfect balance of sweet, funny, and sad. Florence and Morgan are fantastic together. And I also really enjoyed Celeste O'Connor.
I also, real quick before we move on, I want to shout out Maisie's review who said, Florence Pugh writing and singing original songs for this was everything to me. You got Florence Pugh singing in this? Florence Pugh, she's cooking on her IG stories. She's cooking over on IG, cooking with Flo. They got her singing now. What can't this woman do?
Yeah. It makes me sick, honestly. It makes me sick.
You know what? It's to help Slim out. It's just making him too upset. We got to move on to the next movie. We got to move on. I'm sorry. let's talk a little bit about Tori and Lokita, the new film from brothers Luc and Jean-Pierre Dardenne. 6,400 watch lists coming out in theaters from Janus Films. Synopsis, in Belgium, a young boy and an adolescent girl who have traveled alone from Africa pit their invincible friendship against the difficult conditions of their exile.
Mm.
What are you hearing about Tori and Lokita, Slim?
You know, I don't have any experience with these directors, but I've seen the trailer and it feels like a very real, very anxious-inducing film, and more likely, similar to the last movie, I'll cry at some point. But so for me, like, what should I expect with these movies and maybe this movie? And then eventually maybe give me a recommendation on their back catalog, because I think you're more familiar with their work than I am.
Yeah. I have seen all of their movies. I'm a huge fan of the Dardenne brothers. They really maneuver in this excellent sort of like verite social, like neo-realist filmmaking where you get kind of on the ground. You really feel like you're with these characters. A lot of their movies have like a lot of like over the shoulder shots. You just feel like you're living the existence with these characters. They focus on sort of lower class characters, a lot of like immigrant stories like this one. And just sort of examining the way that structures are built around these characters to make it difficult to get through the day when you're living in these circumstances. And I think that, I mean, this one, I mean, it's, if you like the Dardenne brothers, if you like what they're doing, Tori and Lokita definitely is within that same like wavelength. But if you haven't seen any of their work, personal favorite film of theirs is their first film, La Promesse. So if people want a recommendation, I mean, get in there with their first one. It's, they knew what they were doing right off the jump.
1996, that one is from, streaming on the Criterion Channel. So, all right, add to watch list. Let's see, Jason left a review. Like their other films, the Dardennes don't hold back on their raw depiction of life in the lower class. And despite similar topic matters in most of their films, they still find a way to change it up to keep it a bit fresh. Tori and Lakita's bond is the lifeline of the film, and these, what I assume to be first-time actors, really hold their weight. Any VOD call-outs you want to bring up, Mitchell, before we move on?
I have to mention, I was telling you and Mia about this in our Slack DMs last night. I was looking through, I was checking in on iTunes, seeing if that Adam Driver V Dinosaurs movie 65 was available on digital yet.
Has it even been a week yet since that movie came out?
I gotta keep my tabs. It's not, mm-hmm. By the way, is anybody asking, anybody wondering? It's not. But I did see that Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, is available on digital for rent and purchase. So wow. I got to imagine I'm going to be dropping $20 on that pretty soon. Mm-hmm. I want to see what's going on. I need to know what the operation is. Aubrey Plaza, Hugh Grant, Josh Hartnett. I'm in there. I'm going to see what's up.
What a cast.
What are some things you want to call out from last week? So what's been going on Letterboxd?
Last week, you know, Shazam Fury of the Gods dropped. Big family movie sitting at a 3.0 average rating. There's a lot of buzz on IG right now between The Rock and Shazam 2. You can Google it yourself. We're not going to get into the muck right now. But Inside is also at a 3.1 average rating. And Boston Strangler was dropped on Hulu last week, also 3.1. So very, very positive ratings right now for last week's big releases.
A lot of threes going on. Yeah. Over on last week's. But
what about you? Anything you want to highlight from last week?
I'll say on a solemn note, in regards to the John Wick movies, like I'm excited to see John Wick 4, but there is going to be a bittersweetness. Lance Reddick passed away, who is in all the John Wicks, and like an adored actor from The Wire, Oz, like a little appearance on Lost. He's one of those guys who would always show up. Every time he showed up, you knew that this dude was going to deliver, whether like no matter how big the role was. It's a great loss to not have him around anymore. But he has such a dense catalog of films and television. I rewatched Adam Wingard's film The Guest, starring Dan Stevens, Micah Monroe, and Lance Reddick. He has kind of a small role in that, but I mean, he makes an impact when he shows up. Like when he shows up, you know that a thing is turning in this movie. And I mean, I love that movie. I love Lance Reddick. So shout out to him. And I hope other people are, you know, going back through and paying tribute to him. I saw a lot of talk about him on Twitter. I've seen Letterboxd reviews, people watching the other John Wick movies and shouting him out in the reviews. So it's really, heartwarming to see how much people really, you know, adore this man and his work.
Yeah, there was Twitter was great at sharing clips, and I had forgotten that he was on an episode of Eric Andre.
Oh, so that Eric Andre appearance is crazy.
That was a lot of fun to go back and watch that. Real quick, I'll call out before we hear from more of your last week. I listened to the director's commentary of Bram Stoker's Dracula with Francis Ford Coppola. It was just literally Coppola by himself for 90 minutes, 2 hours doing that commentary. I thought it was fascinating hearing him talk about, you know, the reasons why he signed up to do that movie in the first place, along with Godfather Part 3 to become like financially solvent again, which allowed him to, you know, invest in the wine business and resort business. And also mainly my takeaway was like him talking about the business of making movies and how it can just kind of be soul sucking to have to just join the machine and get financiers to pay for the movie he wants to make. So I saw a lot of kind of 20 years ago talk about the movie that he's making now, essentially. Was it Megalopolis?
Megalopolis, yeah.
Where he's like putting all of his own money into, he's going to do it his own way. So, you know, I guess you could go back decades and read interviews with him about like why he would want to do that. But it was pretty fun to go back and listen to him talk about that.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that one. I got to check it out. But like I am, you and I both are huge like worshipers of the physical release commentary, the director commentary mm-hmm. on physical releases. We mm-hmm. need to bring those back. I was listening recently to the movie The Hunted, the William Friedkin movie from 2003 with Tommy Lee Jones and Benicio yeah. del Toro. Vicious movie. Check it out if you haven't seen it. But I was listening to his commentary on that. And William Friedkin's commentaries are like, nuts. That dude does not hold anything back. Coppola's the same way. Like, I just love guys that, like, you know, show up and, like, filmmakers who show up and do not hold anything back on their commentary tracks and are just, like, totally open and honest about everything that goes into making movies. So, yeah, I mean, check out that commentary track. Check out Dracula if you haven't seen it. That movie rules. Mm-hmm. I will shout out. So I got to see, we'll talk about this more in a couple weeks on an episode when it comes out, but I saw the film, How to Blow Up a Pipeline. I got a screener. Thank you, Neon.
Look out.
And it's out, you know, just a quick tease on it. Well, because we'll go into more detail on it in a couple weeks, but I will be very surprised if that movie drops like out of my top 10 of the year by the end of the year. I think that it's a surefire contender for me for one of the best films of the year. But that, I believe, is a perfect way to lead us into we buried the lead here, the big reveal of this week. It's time, it's here. The top 50 of 2023 on Letterboxd from Jack's Facts. It is up, it is available, it is going to be updated weekly. We will have updates on it throughout the year, keeping track what's trending, what's vibing, what is at the top of the Letterboxd community ratings. So Slim, what stood out to you from our first look at the top 50 highest rated films of this year on Letterboxd?
Thanks to Jack coming out. He finally came out of his office. He's like waving the papers like he's Moses
coming down from the mountain.
The number one movie, the top rated movie so far this year is one that I've heard about on Best in Show. And I believe we've mentioned it here on this show, but it's Past Lives. Mm. And I want to read the synopsis for this movie because I feel like we're going to be hearing about this movie for the rest of the year. Nora and Hay, two deeply connected childhood friends, are wrest apart after Nora's family emigrates from South Korea. 20 years later, they are reunited for one fateful week as they confront notions of love and destiny. So this one is, you know, sitting at a 4.2 average rating, and a few of my friends have this at 5 stars. So add this to your watch list. I feel like, you know, we're going to be hearing about this probably for the rest of the year, you know, the next 7-8 months. What do you think?
Yeah, it played at Sundance and like immediately the buzz from Sundance was like, this is the movie to check out this year. This is the one to keep an eye on. We included it in our Best of Sundance feature on Journal. So like I was digging through the Letterboxd reviews for that, seeing a lot of comparisons to like Before Sunrise, the Before trilogy, which I think gives a spark for how Letterboxd is going to, you know, take to this movie. Because that's, I mean, a massive trilogy. But Past Lives coming out from A24 in June. So, I mean, we'll definitely be tracking how it's trending on Letterboxd with a deep look at it on June. I'm sure we'll be doing plenty of it. Anything else you want to call out before we move on? Anything else you want to call out? John Wick 4 sitting at number 2. I Like Movies, our beloved Chandler.
Oh, my God. My
number
movie.
9.
Let me just say, my movie of the year. 2020, what year is it? 2022.
It is.
I almost forgot what year this is. 2022, I Like Movies. About that a-hole kid that works at a movie store. So good. Also, one of my favorites from the year before, The Civil Dead, mm-hmm. which is getting a more of an official release this year from Clay Tatum. So there's some of my favorite movies are in this top 10 right now. So I'm pretty excited. And also Rye Lane, which is a movie that we've heard a little bit about recently, which is kind of like a romance / comedy. Some would say a rom-com.
Somebody should coin that. I don't know.
That's also something that I have in the corner of my eye to track for this year. So it's great to see this list back again.
Yeah, speaking of Rye Lane, you know, Popcorn Fodder wrote a review for Rye Lane, tagged a weekend watch list. Thank you, Popcorn Fodder, where they said, you know, when people say The City was a character when discussing every other rom-com movie to the point it's kind of become meaningless? Well, this is the first time I've actually felt you could say it and mean it unironically. So, I mean, I got to see that movie in I got to see the movie during Sundance, and it is a charmer. It's playing in UK cinemas now. It comes out on Hulu in the US next week, so you and Mia can dive into it a little bit more.
Okay.
But I mean, that's a great movie, it has like one of the greatest cameos in probably the history of cinema.
So before we move on to our own watch list, I do want to call out the Hot 100. Mm-hmm. What are the most watchlisted movies of the last 7 days? And do you want to take a guess? Mitchell, is there any changes in this Hot 100? We can just do top 10, top 3 if you want.
I'll guess the top 3. I'm not going to guess, you know what? I don't think we have time for me to guess the whole 100, but
no, maybe.
On next week's episode. But I'll say it's been an interesting job tracking this and figuring out what the grooves are for it. And typically it feels like the big new release of the week tends to be, you know, of the previous week tends to be, but I don't know. Shazam, I hear it has a disappointing box office. So maybe it's not number one. So my guess, I'm of two minds here. So I'm going to guess in the top three, perhaps Scream 6 might still be in there. And maybe I'm going to guess John Wick Chapter 4 might be in there. You got it.
Scream 6 is in the top 4. It's number 4. John Wick not in it. I would presume it's next week. Shazam not even in the top 10.
See?
The big call out is Everything Everywhere All at Once jumps to number 2 this week. And then the main thing I want to jump out is Bottoms. Bottoms enters the top 5, so making big time gains.
My most anticipated movie of the year, perhaps.
Rachel Sennett, the follow up from Shiva Baby, which was a very much a Letterboxd movie,
big Letterboxd
in my opinion. So that's the main call out. But we have to get to our watch list. We shuffle our watch list every week. It kind of helps us check things off of our own watch list. And I got The Addiction from Abel Ferrara. People call it a vampire movie. It was essentially about a philosophy major who gets bitten by a vampire and has a sort of like existential crisis and asks these philosophical questions about what it means to be a vampire, maybe even being addicted. And the parallels of real drug addiction in this movie were exquisitely done. The photography is great. It's black and white. It's an Abel Ferrara movie, so it's going to be weird, you know, different than your usual mainstream fare. I think back to like King of New York with Walken, Miss 45, Bad Lieutenant, and a host of others. But I liked it. I loved the black and white. The photographer was just out of sight. And you've seen this, right?
Yeah, I'm a huge Abel Ferrara fan. I interviewed him for Letterboxd a couple years ago for his movie Zeros and Ones with Ethan Hawke and really enjoyed the conversation. Speaking of like people like Friedkin, like he's a dude who just like throws it all out there. And I think The Addiction is one of his great movies. You mentioned about it being, you know, a really potent parallel for drug addiction. And he was a drug addict for, you know, many decades and is sober now. But I feel like he has a perspective that, you know, can lean into that and make it really stand out and make it really impressive. Mm-hmm. Also, Christopher Walken, like, unreal sexy in that movie. Like, he did not have to be that sexy
tremendous.
In that movie.
absolutely incredible hair in that movie.
Yeah, big
loved
fan.
My wife was repulsed by his hair, but I loved it.
Can't please everybody.
What did you shuffle and get the last time you were on the show?
I got the 1973 film from Arthur Baron called Jeremy, which only has 1,400 logs on Letterboxd. Only 1,400 people have even seen it on Letterboxd. It's a film about a kid learning cello at an art school in New York, and he falls in love with Susan, this ballet dancer. And it's just about these kids. I don't know exactly how old they are. They're like 14-ish, and they're just falling in love. It reminded me a lot of you and I covered a movie called Melody on the Kayla Janice episode of Four Faves when Kayla came on, that was like barely watched on Letterboxd. You and I had never even heard of it. We had to do some unsavory things to get access to the film. But it reminded me a lot of that, where it's like, it's just a really like raw, like delicate film that I think captures like how enormous these emotions can feel when you're so young and like first experiencing them, how like everything feels like either like the end of the world or the greatest thing that's ever happened to you. And I mean, it's really sweet. It's really charming. And then it rarely like snuck up on me how emotional it got me and how invested I was in these two characters and their like blossoming love. It's on Paramount Plus and Amazon Prime for anybody who wants to stream it. It's also on Blu-ray from Fun City Editions, which is how I watched it. I really recommend checking it out. It's shot on 60mm. It looks great. It looks really cool. Check it out.
I think I just watched, is it Ennis Men? That's also shot in 60mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming back. We're bringing it back.
We need to bring it back. Julia left a review for Brief Encounter, tagged Weekend Watchlist. Such a simple and small story, but it felt so grand. Love comes in all shapes and forms. And you know what Laura and Alec are experiencing can never last. But God, do you want to? I also had to call out, I had to go through like 8 pages of Weekend Watchlist tagged reviews. Just in the last week, it was incredible that people are tagging their reviews Weekend Watchlist. I love it.
Yeah,
love it.
Thanks so much for tagging those. I want to shout out Pat Healy's No Country for Old Men review, who just says, double feature idea. This and Lyle Crocodile. And Pat, I agree. Let's get it. Let's do New Beverly, American Cinematheque. Like, let's do a double feature. Get them on film. No Country with Lyle Crocodile. Get Javier out there to do a Q&A. Talk about how he dove into both of these dense, you know, meaty, deep roles, all the dimensions of, you know, Anton Chigurh and his character in Lyle
Crocodile. It's like Pat knew that you were going to be on the show this week. You know, how can I get this review read on the show? I think Mitchell's going to be on, so we'll see what I can do.
Somehow happening again.
Becky Rice's 65 review, which you theorized would be on streaming in a week after release. Not true.
Where's it
just
at?
Yet.
Where's it at, Adam?
This stinker is packed to the brim with cheap, shitty jump scares, and I fell for every single one of them. I smuggled a quesadilla in the cinema. I'm unstoppable.
I have to say, I pulled this review at the last second before we started recording because Becky smuggling a quesadilla, I knew you would appreciate that. I knew you had to see that.
I have smuggled many a chicken sandwich into the movie theater in my lifetime, and
I'll
I will never stop.
My biggest moment is I was on a date when I was 15 years old. Shout out my friend Kylie, where we saw Fantastic Four, the first Fantastic Four movie with Chris Evans and Jessica Alba in theaters, and we smuggled Subway sandwiches, footlong Subway sandwiches into the movie theater to watch it. I got a tuna sub sandwich. I feel like I regret as a 15-year-old bringing the person who to bring a tuna sandwich.
Foul. That is the foulest thing I've ever heard. My God, for that Fantastic Four movie.
I apologize to everybody in that summer screening of Fantastic
Four
who had to smell my tuna. Can only
assume there was no more dates after that. That was the first and last.
It was our only date. It was our only date.
I can't imagine why.
We were still friends after, but.
All right, so we need to shuffle our watch list. Let's head back to our watch list. And we are going to make some headway on this dang thing. So I'm going to filter my services to stream only. And then I'm going to sort by shuffle. And the first thing that I get, I have to watch before the next episode. Oh my goodness gracious. Do you believe in miracles? We just talked about this movie in a review. Brief Encounter, 1945, from David Lean. I don't know, but it's streaming on HBO Max and Criterion. Wow. A story of the most precious moments in a woman's life. Can't wait. 4.2. So we just heard from Julia. Mm-hmm. Julia, I'm coming. It's my turn now to watch this.
Get those tissues ready, buddy. That's a banger. Celia Johnson's performance in Brief Encounter. Masterpiece.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Okay. What'd you get?
For me, I got a big one. I got John McKenzie, 1980, The Long Good Friday. Who lit the fuse that tore Harold's world apart? Very stoked to see this. Been on my watches for a very long time. Bob Hoskins, Helen Mirren.
This poster.
Poster is great. Poster looks unreal.
I've seen this poster because we did.
We have used this poster for our
Black Friday sale.
Yeah, very stoked to see this. Like a British crime, you know, drama. Mm-hmm. Very stoked to see this. It's on Criterion. It's on HBO Max, just like Brief Encounter. I own it on Blu-ray.
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow me at Mitchell Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in the episode notes. And speaking of episode notes, take the time, take a few minutes to do our survey. Helps us plan the rest of the year, see what people love about the show, what they suggest for changes. So take that survey, make a change.
Thanks to our crew. Thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and that top 50. We got it. And
we're
Sophie
back.
Shin for the episode transcript. And most of all, thanks to you for listening. And everybody who fills out that survey, we really, really appreciate it. It helps a lot. We Can Watch This is a Tape Deck production.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.